So, Berto, you know, I've been asking people to send us their questions, right? And then we answer them.
Yeah.
I've also been more recently asking, hey, instead of asking these epic questions, how about send some short ones?
Like, and what color is your favorite?
Right. What color is my favorite? You know, when I was a kid, it was purple.
Okay. You say kid, like what about, like, what age?
You know, when you're four, you're asked what your favorite color is.
Yeah.
Probably up until you're 10 or something, you know. I feel like when I was in elementary school, your favorite color was a frequent conversation topic.
It definitely was. Yeah. And adults would meet you like, what's your favorite color?
Right.
Mine was black. Oh. It was. And then it modified when I turned, like when I was in my 20s, it became dark blue.
Interesting. Yeah, mine modified and became sky blue eventually. I just loved... you remember the house I lived in Lake City?
Yeah.
There was a lot of sky blue in the bathroom and stuff. Yeah. Anyway, so short questions. We're gonna answer some short questions from the listeners. What do you say?
Let's do it.
This is the Psychology in Seattle podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kirk Honda. I am a therapist, and I am also a professor at a university.
My name is...
A real university.
My name was going to be. Wait, you're a real university? My name is Humberto Castañeda, and I serve ice cream, but only in scoops.
This question is from famous patron Lyndon, who is flying all the way out to go to the live show on January 27, 2018, Antioch University, Seattle, 3 o'clock. Come there if you want to meet all of us.
Yeah.
Really looking forward to it. Famous patron Lyndon wrote in and said, what do you guys think about Jeff Goldblum's shtick? The whole pausing, laughing to himself, jerky head movement thing. Is it the most awesome thing on the planet, or does it annoy the hell out of you? What do you think, Bruno?
First of all, should we start calling him FPL?
Yeah, that's what I call him.
Okay, FPL. All right. So I'm a Jeff Goldblum fan ever since I saw him in the Fly. Because the thing is, the thing about time travel. No, but it was just... I thought there was such a weird oddness to him that was fascinating. And I saw it as a kid, but even then I was like, whoa, there's something odd about this guy. I like it. And then in every movie, he sort of steals the scene. A lot of people see it as a bad thing. Like, there he goes again.
Yeah, it's definitely, I wouldn't be upset at someone for not liking it.
Yeah, absolutely. But like, have you seen Thor?
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
I thought he was great in it.
He was great.
I thought it was economical. Like it wasn't like long scenes of him. It was very quick, quick Goldblums.
So but they used what makes him Goldblum, and it's sort of he's aware of it. You know, it's not like he's aloof or something. Like I think it works
right.
Well.
And he
like that.
Wasn't always like this too. It's sort of like Al Pacino, you know, the older Al Pacino gets, the more
Al Pacino
he is, you know, like when you see him in The Godfather and, you know, the first
he's
two.
He's actually very sedate.
Yeah. When you see him in Dog Day Afternoon, he's acting. He's a regular. Same with Ryan Gosling. When he was younger, like The Believer, I think patron Noel asked us to watch The Believer. It was one of his very first movies as an adult. He's like 19. And it's so refreshing to see him acting, you know, in the later years now, like Drive and even La La Land to some extent.
It's the same one.
his thing is to be as blank as possible, you know?
Right. There are actors that as they age, they still continue to surprise you and do roles that you're like, whoa, I've never seen him do that. Whereas there's those actors that hone a persona,
right,
and they get hired for that persona.
Yeah. So is it chicken or the egg, right? Did the director choose them because they wanted that or does the actor kind of force that into everything?
Yeah. You know? It's like, you know, in We Are the World.
Yeah.
When Bruce Springsteen comes in.
Yeah.
We are the world. You know, they pay him for that G he can hit so gravelly.
Yeah, yeah.
He can't do that A. He can sort of do the E, but that G, man. And the thing about it is that's his persona. You know, you rarely think of him.
So getting back to Goldblum is I think my age, I'm 46, 46. Yeah.
47, 40, 49,
almost 47.
55.
Is I grew up with Goldblum. So mm-hmm. The Fly, he was in Attack of the Body Snatchers. Yeah. He was in, you know, not Jumanji, but not Lost World.
Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park, yeah.
And Independence Day.
Yeah, Independence Day. He was just one of those actors, you know? And then very recently, similar to Bill Murray, there's this very strange fetishizing of him by people younger than me. Mm-hmm. So people in their 30s, like I just was on Reddit and I saw someone had a full-on Jeff Goldblum shower curtain. So it was a shower curtain with Jeff Goldblum and then a dinosaur riding a shark with lasers or something. And it was like this ironic, like, ooh, I got Jeff Goldblum, you know? And to me, I'm like, why Jeff Goldblum? I mean, there's so many other things in the world, you know?
Right.
People started walking around with t-shirts of Bill Murray. Reddit loves Bill Murray, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, I got a selfie with Bill Murray. And I'm like, do you know how many celebrities there are? Plus, like, Bill Murray, you know, the stories you hear about Bill Murray is, okay, so, oh my God, you wouldn't believe what I heard. Bill Murray went into a bar. He went behind the bar. And your mind's going to be blown. He served drinks to the customers. And I'm like, where's the punchline? Okay, a super famous guy went to a bar and served drink. Who cares? Do you know what I mean? Like, because to me, Bill Murray was just another one of those actors. There's a lot of funny guys in the 80s. But there's this weird it's the same thing with Back to the Future. Like, Back to the Future is a great movie. It holds up today. But when I was a kid, I saw it in the theater when I was 14 or whatever. Yeah. It was just another movie I saw. You know, there you had your Terminator, you had your your Aliens, you know, you had your Empire Strikes Back. You know, it was just another movie. But for some reason, there are certain things that survive into the future with the young generation. It had to have been the same when we were young.
Yeah,
like I fetishized the 60s. You know, and I remember one time I was in love with the Beatles, right? So, and eventually I discovered the Monkees. And so I was like, oh, the Monkees, you know, they have some great songs. And I bought their albums from the secondhand store and I listened to the Monkees. And then I got some pins, that I wore on my, like,
your jacket.
And I'm at school and this teacher, is walking by me and she's like, are those the Monkees on your coat? And, you know, so this is 86, 87, and the teacher grew up in the 60s and loved, you know, was in that time. And she's like, why do you have the Monkees? Like, and I'm like, I love music from the 60s, you know, the Beatles, the Monkees. And she's like, the Monkees are corny. You know, she's like, you don't understand. The Monkees are a joke. And I'm like, huh? You know, because I had no context.
You had no idea.
To me, the Monkees were cool.
Yeah.
You know, later I learned they were a joke.
Right.
But so anyway,
The Beatles, the Beach Boys, the Monkees.
Right. It was all the same to me. And so when people point to Ghostbusters and Back to the Future and Jeff Goldblum and Bill Murray, I'm like, it doesn't compute in my brain as to why you're focusing on that.
Like, I wonder,
like people who grew up in the 50s must be like, why are you focusing on James Dean?
Sure.
Like James Dean was cool, but there's all these other actors that you don't even know about that had way more movies than James Dean did. Like why are you fetishizing this random actor out of all the other actors that were so great in the 50s? You know what I mean?
The other day I was walking by a group of kids, like young teenagers, like middle teenagers kind of thing. And they were singing, hey now, you're a rock star, get your game on, go play, right? And I like finished the song or I sang the next line or whatever. And they were like, what? How do you know that song? And it kind of cuts both ways, right? One is like, wait a minute, how do you know that song? But also, why that song? Like, what? Yeah. How did that one survive through?
Right. Because that song came out before they were born, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had the same experience a few years ago. I was in a library with kids, and I was training them on something, and there was a break, and kids were going off and doing different things and listening to music and stuff. And they a Billy Joel song, or Billy one of the Billy Idol Billy Joel songs came on.
Billy Idol, Billy Joel, who can tell them apart?
Well, that was the thing. So you couldn't get two more different artists, you know? Right. Billy Idol is so different from Billy Joel, but they thought it was the same person, you know what
oh.
I mean?
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, oh, it is, you know, and what did we do along right. those lines? You know, when we were young, when we were just like, oh my God, you have to listen to this awesome funk song by like, you know, whatever, the Commodores, yeah. you know? So if I don't want to poo-poo on people's love for Jeff Goldblum. That's great. I actually really loved him in Thor Ragnarok, you know? And in the Hotel, the Wes Anderson.
Oh yeah.
He was good in that too. I think that there's a chance that his shtick could get a little over the top if he, like, I feel like Thor Ragnarok, actually the director kind of reined him in a
sure.
little bit, you know, it's because he delivers lines, like there's lines that he delivers
yeah.
that aren't like all Goldblumed up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like when he's like,
why are you handing me that?
Yeah. Why are you handing me the liquid stick or the,
yeah,
you know,
he just interrupted me.
He just interrupted me. Yeah. Like there's lines that he's delivering that are actually funny. He's doing it in a little bit of his style, but he's not completely ruining it with his affectation, you know?
By the way, have you seen Justice League?
Yeah.
We need to do a Justice League episode to counteract all the hate.
Well, let's just talk about it right now. This is one of those junk pile episodes. But
okay, so do you remember how upset I was that everyone trashed Batman v Superman?
Yeah, I was.
We did an episode.
Yeah, I wasn't super upset, but I was just a little boggled because I was like, yeah, that's a 6 out of 10. You know, it's not a 1 out of 10.
Okay, I was upset, and I'm even more upset now for the following reason. And I finally honed the argument in my head because at first I was going down the line of, well, so many people liked it. How could you be right about that? Clearly that can't hold up because I have things that I think are great, even though they're not super popular and stuff like that. So I thought, all right, what is it? What is it that annoys me? And part of it is, you know, the amount of money and number of people that work on these things. And we have all, and I'm guilty because I've done this with the episode one and all that stuff. We've all gotten to this point where we're so cynical.
Yeah.
And we are so vicious.
Particularly with certain topics.
With, yes.
Like a Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
Or a hero movie.
And
right?
Look, I'm throwing my first rock at my face, right? You've heard me, yeah. right? I've been so vicious about things like episode one. But to be fair, episode one is complete garbage. Where is what I'm about? No, but the truth is that as I sat there and I realized, okay, first of all, I definitely enjoyed Justice League.
Yeah. I think I gave it a 6, if I'm not mistaken.
Which
to me means like definitely watchable. Probably best as a rental, you know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah, see, I actually liked it a lot better. I'd give it like a 7.5 or something. But the point is, what I will not do is call it a heaping pile of trash.
Right.
So that's
the part.
There
was nothing about it that was a heaping pile of trash.
You want to sit there and tell me all the things that annoyed you about it? That's great. Do you want to hear the ones that annoyed me about the Avengers, about Thor Ragnarok? Yeah. Like, there's things.
Yeah, there's a culture around this that highly affects not only the ratings on the internet, but also I listen to podcasts where there are very snooty movie reviewers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it even gets under their skin too. There's this thing where they hate the DC movies. They just do.
Yeah.
And there's nothing, no matter how, you know, okay Justice League could be,
right.
they will hate it.
Right.
And no matter how questionable an Avenger movie is, they're gonna love it.
Yeah.
The same with Fast and the Furious. At somewhere around Fast and Furious 5, the reviewers started falling in love with those movies. Like
oh.
we're talking like snooty movie NPR people talking
really?
About how wonderful Fast and Furious 6 and 7 was.
It's
and,
like doing that with Saw, the Saw series.
Yeah, and I'm just like, have you seen the movies? And because you know now, if you enjoy it, you know, great. But or if you don't enjoy it, great. But to claim that Justice League is empirically bad, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially Justice League, honestly, because Batman v Superman was in a particularly dour tone. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Justice League is so much like an Avengers movie.
Well, I would say that, you know, to me, the big difference between Justice League and any Marvel movie is that in Justice League, I actually feel consequence and sort of like sadness.
Ugh.
Because you know, they
not me.
Well, like when they...
Oh, that's... spoiler alert, by the way.
Oh, shit. Dude, you might need to rewind that because that's a big one. Anyways, there is a moment in the Justice League where I thought, wow, I actually feel that a character could get hurt. I feel like there are real consequences to what's happening right now.
I didn't. I with Justice League and with the Avengers movies, by the way, I don't even understand what could possibly kill Thor. I have no idea what could possibly kill Captain America.
Do you remember that scene in the Avengers where Tony lifts up his t-shirt and his whole back is injured because he's just a human? Oh, no. That was in Justice League.
Right.
Because they actually show the difference in power scales.
Right. But do I ever, in Justice League, was I once worried about any of those characters? I wasn't.
I think that's too cynical then, because like,
no, it's just me with all these movies. Like,
no, but I mean,
the only hero movies that I actually worry about people are like Ant-Man. I actually, because Ant-Man, he's just Paul Rudd walking around in a suit. Like, he doesn't have, you know, when he gets small, he has like, you know, strength and stuff like that. But I remember actually being worried. Iron Man in the first Iron Man movie, like, I legitimately worried about Iron Man in that first movie.
I guess I have the reaction with Marvel movies. By the way, I love Marvel movies, but I have the reaction that I don't think anything bad will ever happen to almost anyone in a Marvel movie.
Right.
But
I feel the same way about Justice League.
But I don't feel that way about Justice League and DC because I've seen bad things happen, number one. Like, the whole Dark
Knight. But Wonder Woman, I mean, she can't die.
No, but I'm not saying, look, of course part of me knows that, look, are they going to kill off these? Of course not. But at the same time, well, I mean, say what you will, but they did kill Superman, right? Like, and the other aspect of it is I will never expect to see Batman doing something unrealistic. By the realm of that we're operating in, versus if you look at like the Black Widow and all these, they're being, you know, like, they're doing some crazy stuff. No human could come close to being able to.
I wish all of those heroes, I wish they spent more time making me feel as though they could actually be hurt, because these are action movies. They're, you know, if you're gonna define these movies, these are battle movies, right? They're
But spoiler alert.
Well, no, don't spoil.
No, this is not a huge one. But do you remember one of the characters broke their leg in the Justice League?
Do I remember that? No. Oh, was it broken?
Well, it was very injured.
It was injured.
Very injured.
But it quickly recovered.
Well, but that doesn't even happen in the Marvel side,
yeah,
right?
Well, I'm not saying Justice League is, you know, better or worse. Anyway, the point is like, Justice League was a solid movie. It had a clean plot for the most part. There were some wonky kind of hand wavy things that they were doing to kind of move the plot along. They like, bit off a lot of that was hard to chew for the writer, in that they had to introduce like three new characters, you know.
But like, most of the complaints I hear, you know, because I heard a ton of reviews and things, a lot of them center around, and I'm totally paraphrasing, I've read every single comic on these things, and here's a litany of very pedantic, geeky points to me.
Right.
But like, one of them was, oh, they picked this one bad guy to be the bad guy. That's silly because of all these reasons. And I'm like, I don't know any of the bad guys they've picked in the Marvel movies ever.
Right.
Even the time when they revealed Thanos was going to be, I didn't even know any of those stories.
And that's fine. Like, if that bugs you, you know, imagine if someone rebooted Star Wars and like Darth Vader didn't exist or something. You know, you'd just be like, what? You know, that's fine. You can complain. But most of the reviewers are just saying it's just like a terrible movie. Like, it's badly written, badly acted. Ben Affleck's a joke. And it's just like, no. Like, the movies, what I would love to do is take these reviewers, just erase their brain about DC, and just say, here's a new movie about you know, Batman and stuff.
Yeah.
Watch it. Don't worry about the world. Just like, did you enjoy yourself for the hour and a half that you watched this frivolous? That's the other thing. These movies are fucking frivolous. You know, these aren't like Shakespeare. You know, these are popcorn movies. So the level at which people seriousness that they take these things, I'm just like, you don't understand what movie going is for. Like, you're supposed to sit down, take in the story, and just have fun, you know?
I think for me, the reason it's more emotional with DC is that I was at a very young, impressionable age when the first Superman came out, and it really made an impact on me.
Right.
Because I there was this combination of, I wanted to live in the United States, and I looked up to the ideal of the American dream and all these things.
Well, so that's getting back to my other point of, like, when I was growing up, that movie was way bigger than Ghostbusters or Back to the Future. I mean, the Christopher Reeves first Superman movie was so epic and so America, you know, and so enticing to young boys, you know.
And the thing is, if you watched it now, there is so much cheesy stuff and bad scenes and
bad editing and everything. He reverses time by turning
it's
the
horrible.
Earth backwards.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
And yet, it was great.
Yeah.
And to say with a straight face that what we've just watched is a heaping pile of shit.
Right. Well, I want to get into another thing that's bothering me.
I hope that answered the question, Patron Lyndon.
I want to get into another thing that's bothering me about nerds, about EA and all that kind of stuff, but let's take a break first. All right, we're back from the break. So if you haven't become a patron of the podcast, do so now. Go to patreon.com. When you become a patron of the podcast, you get access to all of our premium episodes, and you don't have to listen to any ads for the most part. Also, I published my book called Multi-Role Clinical Supervision, which is available on Amazon. I'm not going to say I don't check 5 times a day to see how many people bought it, and I'm not going to say that every person who buys it, I notice. So go on Amazon, buy it now if you're interested in that book. Also, join the Facebook fan group. I never go on that page. It's run by Famous Patron Lennon, or FPL. Also, join Talkspace. They became a sponsor again for December. And you have to use the promo code Kirk. So it's an online therapy thing. If you're looking for a therapist and you're having trouble finding one, or you're just interested in maybe supplementing counseling or something, and you talk to your therapist and they say it's okay, go to Talkspace.com, use the promo code Kirk, you'll get a discount. It'll also signal to them that you're one of my listeners, and they'll continue being a sponsor. It's really a big deal for us.
FPL like the Friend Propulsion Laboratory or something?
Yeah, JPL. What do you think about the whole EA thing that's been going on?
Oh, with Battlefront, like Star Wars Battlefront 2 or whatever?
Yeah.
My understanding was that they came out with this leveling system that was unfair because you had to pay all this money to unlock some of the higher levels.
It's not leveling. It's like perks to your character that give you an advantage over other characters on the multiplayer.
You can earn it. You can earn it. It just takes like a 40 hours to earn it.
Oh, no, more hours than that.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And so people were, understandably, I don't like all these farm bills and all these things that just like milk you for money. I think that it's unfair. But my understanding is that there was like a very aggressive backlash.
Right, right.
And like they threatened wasn't there like death threats to the producers and things?
In terms of my cultural pocket reacting to that cultural pocket, because it still dominates Reddit today, actually. Like Reddit, the front page is just filled with this kind of stuff. And I bought the game and played it.
Yeah.
And I don't play multiplayer anyway, so I don't really care. Do you know what I mean? And to me, it's like, if you don't want to play it. That,
return it.
Yeah, don't
get your money back
or don't buy it. You know.
Yeah.
Like there's so many other multiplayer games you can enjoy. Like you, one, you could just enjoy the old Star Wars Battlefront that came out a year ago. That one's still a fun game.
Like the most effective thing you could do is write your feedback succinctly and politely. Return the game and say, hey, I'm returning the game because of this. Yeah. If you change it, I might consider buying it back. If enough people do that, they'll change it to whatever you want.
Right. And us, you know, and I suppose in essence, that is what the Nerd Ragers are doing. They're speaking out. But the amount of mirth, you know, that comes out in these people, it's just like, it's a video game.
Yeah.
It's just a game among tens of thousands of other video games. Now, as a Star Wars fan, I get that you really want your Star Wars stuff to be good, but think about all the Star Wars games that have come out over the past like 10 years. There's been some poopers, you know?
Man, it's again, I'll say it again, I'm so guilty of this myself. It's this feeling of entitlement. We are entitled to the top tier entertainment, and if it doesn't live up to what we want and demand, hell will rain down.
If you rely on video games for this much of your life, I have to say there's something out of balance, you know?
Yeah.
Because to me, pretty much every video game I play now disappoints me because they don't give me the feeling I got when I was in my 20s when I played a video game. And so like I'm like I could see how people would like that, but kind of bored, you know, moving on, you know, I'm obviously not the target audience for this sort of stuff, but to me, I just feel like as I was watching it, I was just like, you know, day one of it, I'm like, wow, okay, maybe this EA thing, you know, maybe they'll hear this and they'll roll it back. And then as EA started kind of dicking around with it, there became this very entitled voice. You know, to me, it's like if you go to your grocery store, like actually, here we go. So the grocery store up the street, the Safeway up the street, whenever I go, it's the closest grocery store to my house.
Yeah.
Whenever I go there, the lines are always super long. They never have enough cashiers.
Mm-hmm.
There's always, you know, stations without cashiers, and there's super long lines. I remember one time I went in there and there was a line, there was one cashier, and there was a line that went, you know how like they have the cashier stations and then on one wall there'll be like the wine section, mm-hmm. you know, it's way over to the wall.
Right.
The line went all the way to the wine section.
Oh, no.
So we're talking like, I don't know, maybe like 30 people in one line. Yeah. And if you're in the back of that line, that's probably like, that's probably literally like 55 minutes. You know what I mean? And so I was like so fed up because it'd been sort of a progression of this sort of stuff. I like went to the manager. I found him because he was, you know, there were plenty of employees around, but just none of them were being cashiers. You know what I mean? And I go to the manager. I'm like, there's one line and it's like an hour long. And he's like, oh, okay. And so he, you know, manages to get one more person, you know. And after a while, now I could post on Reddit about that. It's just that one Safeway too. Other Safeways are fine. There's something wrong with that Safeway, I think.
Right.
I could, you know, petition outside. I could get upset. But instead, I just said, I'll just drive down the street and go to the QFC.
Yeah. Yeah, choice.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, if you don't like Battlefront 2 Star Wars, just play another one of the thousands of other awesome multiplayer games that are available to you and have fun doing, and you know, maybe write one bad review and just, you know, just buy an independent game. There's a lot of really great indie games out right now, you know.
Part of it is this feeling of immediate gratification. Like I want, because if we all had a sense of, well, it's not going to affect me anytime soon, but I think if I write a well thought out, you know, short review that about what I didn't like, and then basically I move on to something else, maybe they'll come around, but it'll take a while. Maybe they won't.
Right.
But we want this now. We want it fixed. I want my pleasure.
I'm going to extend that a little bit and say that it's not now. It's like, how come they're not listening to us? Mm. How dare they not listen to us? It was the same thing with, you know, Rick and Morty, that whole stuff.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's like you realize you guys don't own the TV show, right? You realize that Dan Carmen and that other guy, it's their show.
Yeah.
And you just happen to like it.
Yeah.
And if you don't like where it's going, then that's
jump off the train.
That's you don't own that thing. You can send a letter and you can request things, but if they don't listen to you, tough shit.
I feel like you're lecturing me about episode one.
you were never like that. You were right. Just, you
no,
were
the
just
truth
incensed.
Is, it's not like I sensed a death threat or something.
Well, it wasn't like you thought, okay, George Lucas is going to hear me. Like right. at no point did right. you think, well, now George Lucas will surely listen to me.
Right, right.
You know, and the few other people sure. that are, and with the EA thing, it's like, as soon as you figured out what was happening, I was like, oh, I get it. EA's trying to rake it in. You know, because what's going to happen is that, you know, some people aren't going to play it or they're not going to buy it because they don't like that loot crate situation.
Right.
But enough people are going to buy it. And so they did an analysis and said, like, per person, we are going to make much more on average. Mm-hmm. We're going to lose some customers. We're going to maybe lose the hardcore gamers that like to play. But this is a widespread game. You know, this is a middle class suburban game for everyone. You know, like I bought it for crying out loud. You know, and so like we're going to suck in a lot of people, and these are people who play Farmville and stuff. You know, these are people who get sucked in this. They might play one game a year, and you know they have disposable income, and so. They'll buy the game for $60 and they might, you know, maybe they'll throw down another $50 to get this extra stuff.
Right.
And they're, you know, so as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, I get it. EA is applying a well-known money-making scheme mm-hmm. to perhaps the biggest title that will come out in this year.
Right.
And okay, I get it. But for me, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
Like, it's not important enough to me to plop down another $100 just so I can compete against other people on multiplayer. So I'm just not going to do that.
Yeah, I was hearing it would take you to max out. You could spend like $2,500 or something like that.
Yeah. I think it's a little exaggerated because if you wanted to get everything, you know what I mean? But if you wanted to be competitive or something like with the right guns and stuff, I think it's a lot less than that. But the point is like I was like, okay, so I get it. It's like there are certain games that I get into, like phone games or something. Mm-hmm. And at a certain point, you know, like Candy Crush or something. Okay. And at a certain point, I'm like, oh, I see. They ramp up the difficulty and they get you addicted. And at a certain point, the only way you can progress is if you actually plop down some money and buy some extras. You know what I mean? And I was like, I get it. This is a free game. But this is how they end up making their money.
That's how they make their money.
And there's probably a lot of people who plop down $10, $20, $30 here.
Yeah.
And that's how they make their money. I get it. This is where I jump off this ship. This is where I stop playing this game because that's how they get you. Like if I plop down $2 now, now that they have my credit card, how easy is it for me when I'm up late at night and I need to get to the next level that I'm just going, it's just another $2 to buy that extra thing.
Well, and it's interesting how maybe for folks that were used to video games from before, it feels so much more insulting because I there was this car game that I loved on my phone, but it was like that. Free to download. And then you could pay for upgrades, right?
Right.
But I was playing it without upgrading, without paying for anything and just trying to do as good as I could in every race. And I like you said, I got to a point in the game where I have to go up against this boss character. And I'm like, oh, I've got my car so maxed out. There's no way. And I had been beating every single one up to that. And I go and I play and I lose. I'm like, well, okay. And then I try again and I lose. And I try and I keep optimizing. And I can't beat it. And then I realize I think it's impossible. I think I need to buy this nitrous thing.
Yeah.
And so I finally bought it. I got through and I was like, and then that was it for me.
Right.
That was it.
Right. Then you're like, okay, move it. I'll play a different game.
And ironically, because like, well, it was free. But ironically, I would have paid them up front for the game.
Right.
But it's the fact that they tricked me and then forced me in that moment to make a decision.
Right.
That I felt a little betrayed.
Right.
Now, did I lash out? No, I just felt like, okay, well, this is not for me. This method is not for me.
Right. Yeah. It is, you know, you could say it's tricky, and I suppose it is. It's playing with your emotions to some extent. You know what I mean? They know that point where it's like, you know, this we'll suck him in. We'll, you know, we'll get him into the routine. You know, they have
That's the drug addict thing.
Well, they have an algorithm. You know, they know. They know what works. You know, Candy Crush is actually a really, really good example because the lights and the colors and it's candy.
Yeah.
And the sounds, man, the sounds of Candy Crush are so involved in the addiction.
I honestly do find it predatory, though, because I'm an adult, but if the younger you are, then it starts feeling even more creepy.
Well,
you know?
That's in my, to me, that's where guidance comes in. You know, like how many kids have access to a credit card? Like if you have a kid who has a phone who they, and they can play whatever they want without being monitored at all, or an iPad or something, and they have a credit card and they can rack up a bill, to me, something's wrong with that. Like, when I was a kid, just because the technology is there to allow that to happen, doesn't mean that it's a good model for life. You know, when I was a kid, if I wanted to blow a bunch of money, the max I could blow would be what I had in my
drawer,
which was probably like $18 on a good month. You know what I mean? And so, like, you know. And if I had my dad's credit card, you better believe I would have blown hundreds of dollars on Atari cartridges or something. You know what I mean? So to me, it's like the excuse about, well, it's predatory to kids. It's like, well, how come your kids are playing stuff and you're not even monitoring it?
Yeah. No, right. I think, but it's sort of along the lines of, so as a kid, I used to love commercials. During cartoons, you know, like Saturday morning cartoons, and then they'd have commercials. But the reality is, and I guess business is business, but a lot of those commercials were highly engineered to manipulate the hell out of kids.
Yeah.
Right? And so, is it up to the parents?
Commercials are designed to manipulate adults, whatever target audience they're hitting.
But is it up to the adults to moderate and you don't just give in to everything the kid wants? Of course, of course. But there are boundaries. You know, there are boundaries. So, for example, recently there was this huge scandal on YouTube because all these channels that are targeted towards kids were using practices to sort of like game the tag system to get tons and tons of hits. And then the content they were putting on there was not for kids. Like, it was super disturbing. And kids were watching it because what happened is adults would install YouTube Kids, which is an app that they could install, and they would just plop, you know, okay, here, watch Princess Sophia or whatever. But then after that one ended, another one starts playing automatically, and those would be the auto-recommended ones. And so kids were getting exposed to, like, super questionable content. Wow. So, okay, that's an extreme, right?
Like, I'm sure YouTube adjusted their algorithms.
Well, not after, I mean, they did because they just lost like billions in sponsorship overnight. Like, Kraft not only pulled out of YouTube, they pulled out of Google or Mars. Mars said, we are suspending all our global advertisement through all Google things until they address this. And so they had to remove hundreds of thousands of videos.
So the original nerd rage that happened that I... And I'm a nerd. We're nerds.
We're nerds.
I play Dungeons and Dragons.
We're Revenge of the... What was it?
and so, like...
The nerves. That's what it was.
When you reference other episodes, it doesn't help. You know what I mean? Anyway, so I get it. I get upset like other nerds do at things. It's fine. But when the whole Lindy West thing happened... Do you know Lindy West? She's a
Lindy
Seattle
West.
Feminist writer for The Stranger.
No, anyway, I didn't hear about this.
She started talking about, I think, like, she started questioning whether or not rape jokes. This was like 5 or 6 years ago, or maybe 8 years ago or something. I can't remember the exact thing, but she was talking about video games, I think. Anyway, she ran into some kind of nerd rage button. She pressed some nerd rage button. And she's not even like a huge name, you know what I mean? She ended up getting completely harassed and attacked by nerd rage.
Oh, wow.
By internet people, video game people or something. I think she was saying something like, you know, video games are sexist or something, you know. It's like a lot of exploitation of women's bodies and stuff. I can't remember what she was saying.
This outrage machine, though, it is beyond nerds at this point.
Yeah.
Right?
But the nerd rage has a consistency to it.
That's true. Yeah.
That is very distasteful,
yeah,
and is so counter to my morals, you yeah know, and so destructive, I think, and really misrepresents nerd community, I think. And essentially, as far as I can tell, they're either just massively echo chambered misogynists, you know, just like very much propagandized around like what feminism is or something. Or they're legitimate psychopaths who just, this is their home,
yeah,
you know, 4chan and stuff. And so, either way, when they end up going crazy about EA, which I don't even know if it's the same group, honestly, but it feels similar.
Yeah.
I immediately have a visceral reaction against it because of the history of this group, you know,
right,
like with Rick and Morty, right? It's like, there were some of them that were extremely hostile,
right,
about the idea that Harmon would hire some women writers who, according to you, were present from the beginning or something, right?
Oh, not necessarily from the beginning, but what I was saying was that a lot of the themes that they're accusing the women writers of introducing were present from the beginning.
With Harmon, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's this very regressive, harmful, it's unfair.
Right.
And if I was a woman and I read some of the stuff that was being, you know, written about the Rick and Morty stuff from this, what I believe to be a very small percentage of people, but very, yeah, but they're very vocal. They're very a very vocal minority on yeah the internet. I would be scared.
Yeah.
I mean, I would be like, these are my fellow Americans.
Yeah.
These are supposed to be nice kids who watch cartoons. You know, these are supposed to be nerds who are supposed right to be like, these aren't like KKK members.
A lot of them sound like that guy that did that Rampage killing a few years ago.
Right.
You know, recently,
I still get emails about on a daily basis, by the way. People saying that they respect him. Yeah.
Yeah. Recently, just like the last few days, there was the outrage against the New York Times on Twitter. Did you follow that?
No.
New York Times posted an article where they were interviewing, basically it was called Hate in Middle America, or Disguised in Middle America, or something like this. And they were interviewing some white supremacists that live in Ohio, I think. And it was sort of a profile of them. And the article didn't preach or make a point of its own other than profiling the people. But as I read it, I was like, wow, this is the scary reality, is that there are these people that live in quote unquote normal neighborhoods with
yeah
quote unquote normal people. And then what they say is essentially they think not, Hitler wasn't so bad. They support Nazism, all these things. Well, there was this huge backlash against the New York Times on Twitter, this Twitter storm, because it's like, they're normalizing racism. They're normalizing Nazis.
Yeah.
And now, even if, let's say that they have a point that they want to debate, what gets me is, since everything gets dialed up to 11, everything is an outrage. Everything is equal. Then nothing is outrageous.
Yeah.
And everything gets normalized. So you have, you know, 1 minute Harvey Weinstein for 40 years or 50 years raping women, yeah, abusing them like crazy.
Yeah.
But you get like the same noise the next day because of an article or because of something else or because. Yeah. And so I'm like, guys, people, gals, everyone,
yeah,
can we like discern a little better?
Right. Yeah. There were two things happened within the same like 10-day period. One was the whole EA thing with Battlefront uh-huh 2. And the other thing was net neutrality.
Oh, right.
And the net neutrality thing had the same amount of legs on Reddit
yeah
as the EA
as
thing.
The EA thing, yet one was super important to to most people.
Yeah.
And the other one was this transitory thing about one video game.
Right. and it's so that's the thing. Now, this sort of argument gets on my nerves sometimes, because it's like you and I are talking about Justice League, and you know, and so you could easily say there's more important things to talk about than Justice League, right?
Yeah.
There's global warming. There's war atrocities. There's famine. There are people. There are millions upon millions of people in the world right now who don't even have electricity.
Right.
Like they don't have electricity.
Yeah.
they don't have running water. You know, there are millions of people who don't have electricity, and they don't have running water,
right?
And they don't have a place to go to the bathroom, and they don't know where they're going to eat, and they're being exploited by, you know, warlords in the area, and they don't have internet, they don't have police help, they don't have health, you know, they don't have any health care, and we're talking about Justice League. So I hate it when people make those comparisons about, like, how dare you talk about such a you know, there's only like a few things you could ever talk about in according to that metric.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think the difference in my mind is in the same day, both things surfaced.
Yeah.
War atrocities in Uganda. And then you and I go online and start a petition for the public execution of Zack Snyder because of Justice League.
Right.
And it's the level, the extreme, yeah.
And
right?
It feels the same to some. Well, that's why I don't go on Twitter, because I don't understand the interface of Twitter. Like,
yeah.
When I go on Twitter, it's just a gobbledygook of like all these things I just don't care about.
Yeah.
Like Reddit, for instance, I remember hearing about Reddit, and I remember being like, Reddit's probably dumb. It's probably like this weird like internet thing.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I went on it, I was like, oh my God, this is beautiful. It's like, it's a perfect, it's simple. There's no bells and whistles. The ads are very small. Like it instantly became useful to me. You know
yeah.
what I mean? Twitter's been around for a long time, and as a podcaster, I keep trying to like revive my Twitter account, our Twitter account. And every time I try to do, like every 6 months, I'll be like, you know what, I should really start doing the Twitter thing, you know, because you know people, everyone's Twitter, all podcasts, every podcast tweets, you know,
yeah.
And so you know people want to tweet about, you know, that's the platform, right?
Right.
And every time I get into it, I'm like, what am I don't get this shit, you know?
Yeah.
Like I mean I get what it is and I get what the functionality is, but the interface is just so jumbled. Do you know
yeah.
what I'm saying?
No, I totally know what you're saying. That's why I also don't do it.
Whereas Reddit, it's like there are or Facebook, for instance, like
there's structure.
Yeah, there's structure
yeah.
to it. And there's like a combing. Now, I know on Twitter you can go through and unfollow, like you can silence certain things or, but
yeah.
isn't the point of following someone that you get to see their tweets?
Yeah.
So why would you follow them? You know what I mean? So to me, it's like if I went on Twitter, I would follow like five people.
Right.
Because they put out enough tweets to entertain me, I suppose.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So, I mean, the way you were describing Reddit when you first experienced it, and this is going to sound totally bizarre, but when I first experienced 4chan, I felt the same way. But keep in mind, this was back in like 2008.
4chan is basically, the format is basically Reddit, right?
It's even more linear, if you can imagine.
Okay.
Like literally, the website hasn't changed forever, and
right.
it's
forum based,
yeah.
comment page based. You know.
Oh, and to be fair, I'm specifically talking about 4chan/B, which is the random section, the ad hoc section, which is where nowadays it is just a cesspool. What happened is when I first tried it years and years ago, there was like 30% really interesting stuff. And you would find out about news stories way before other things. And there were really interesting discussions,
right.
discussions about physics and about stuff.
Right.
And then there was another 60% fluff. And then there was like a 10% of the worst of the worst.
But they would probably be relegated to certain threads or stuff, right?
They just didn't happen as often, or you knew how to avoid them or whatever. But then over the years, it became that 10% became the 100%.
Right. For whatever reason, 4chan became associated with Pepe and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then it just like yeah. attracted that thing. And for people who want like not that, they just go to Reddit, because Reddit doesn't have any of that.
Yeah.
And if anyone ever does get on that, they get banned from certain, you know, certain channels or whatever.
Sure.
Or they just get downvoted to the point where you never see that, you know, because you, when you look at it, only the
yeah.
upvoted comments get to the top and stuff. Anyway. So here's a question from patron Eric. What do you and Umberto think about recreational marijuana usage, and possibly what do you think of it regarding mental health? What do you think?
So as I've talked about in the podcast, I've had bad personal experiences with cookies.
I got into a big argument with people who know that guy, by the way, at the Halloween party. Did you hear about that?
I did not.
So if you didn't know the story, Berto went to someone's house and the guy had a pot or hash infused cookies, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And 1 gram of hash per cookie.
And this guy, who's a friend of yours, knows that you don't smoke pot.
That's right.
Or at least knows you've never smoked pot with him.
Yeah, that's right.
And this guy is he's a purveyor of pot. So yeah. He probably knows his friends that smoke and who don't. He knows you don't smoke pot. And he said something like, "Oh, these are magical cookies."
Yeah, and I was eating the rest of his food, which was delicious.
Which
is not pot infused.
And then
said,
next
"Oh, you should have a cookie. They're magical."
They're magical. Yeah.
And I naively assumed
it's not naive.
It's a delicious cookie.
Yeah, that's not naive. That is normal human logic. Okay,
right.
We've established you have an IQ in the 99.9 percentile. If your brain interpreted that as like a good cookie, and so you ate one, and then
was delicious,
and you ate another one, and then you ate another one.
By the way, if the cookie had tasted like dusty or something or whatever, I would have certainly not eaten a second one. But it tasted like a delicious apricot walnut cookie.
But one bite of that would have done something to you. Anyway, so you were completely overdosed on pot.
Yeah.
So we're at this Halloween party and this topic comes up somehow. And I get into a debate with these two people about it. And they're like, their thesis was, "You're stupid." Their thesis was, "Umberto is stupid."
He should have known.
Right. Like, he said it was, "Oh, eat this cookie. It's magical." So I didn't even know that the guy was feeding you food.
Yeah.
Like, so he's feeding you food.
Yeah.
And then he's like, "Hey, try this cookie. It's magical."
Yeah.
Like, to them.
And it wasn't even like, "Try this cookie. It's magical." No, there was a pile of cookies in a plate next to the rest of the food. And he said, "Try a cookie. They're magical."
Yeah. So to me, I was just like, this is massively irresponsible behavior. It's actually a pet peeve of mine because I've heard of this before. My thesis to these other people who know this guy who dosed you accidentally, he let Umberto eat hash on the level that even a hardcore hash user would never take.
Right. And by the way, he was so unaware that he honestly thought I had had one cookie.
But
which, by the way,
would
have been too much.
Yeah.
Right. But when I told him I had had 3 cookies, he was in complete shock.
Right.
Because, you know, he was like, he himself, who does daily, smokes hookah, all that stuff, he was like, he would never eat more than 1 cookie.
Right. So your these other mutual friends were like, just badgering me. Just like, "Well, now you're stupid because you think that, you know, that Umberto was not stupid, you know?" And I'm like, I don't think Umberto was being stupid at all, you know, given this scenario. And I didn't know that he was feeding you food and then offered you a cookie.
They know that.
So anyway, what do you think about recreational marijuana usage? Patron Eric wants to know.
I actually, first of all, my global stance on drugs is that making them illegal causes more problems than it helps.
Totally.
Number one. Number two, I think in the spectrum of drugs, having been massively overdosed on pot, I think pot is the least of our worries.
Right.
Less than cigarettes and alcohol.
Right. Well, less than alcohol. Anyway.
I've certainly had way more problems with alcohol in my life than I have had with that one time, right?
Yeah.
And so, anyways, that's just, of course, my anecdotal experience. But what I will say is, if someone is an adult and does it responsibly, meaning in a safe place, and you know they don't do it when it's going to affect their work or other things, I view it as responsible self-dosing of any other pleasure thing, like eating a delicious meal or an alcohol or a movie they enjoy. But to the extent of that, that's if it doesn't affect the lives of those around them in a negative way. Like, I'd say the same thing about alcohol.
Yeah, let's take a break. When we get back, let's continue talking about pot, because there's another patron who has some more questions. All All right, we're back from the break. So another patron wrote in and said, I am an LMFT from Alabama. I listened to your podcast on marijuana from 2016, and it was great. And I'm trying to remember the episode we did on marijuana in 2016. But anyway, as a therapist in a university city with a party reputation, I continually have new clients come in who talk about smoking weed every day. I believe they'd benefit from antidepressant medication because they also suffer from depression and anxiety. However, any medical professional will tell these guys that they cannot smoke weed while taking this med. That's the company line. But I don't believe they'll quit smoking weed. I wonder if there's any actual evidence that weed causes issues alongside such a med. I want them to cut back on their weed use, and we usually work on that, but I doubt many will quit altogether. Any thoughts? Berto, do you have any thoughts on that?
Is that still recreational, or is that dependent?
Well, so it's all linguistic. It just depends on how you define it.
I guess. I look at it...
What would make the difference?
Yeah, okay. Here's an example. I'm going to take alcohol again. You ask someone, like, do you have a problem with alcohol? And there's the usual questions, like, does it cause you to have to apologize the next day? Has it caused you, you know, relationship problems? On and on. Has it affected your work? Have you had to miss work for being sick from all these kind of things? Yeah. So maybe I'd go along those lines. Also, it could be about a frequency thing. Like,
well,
if someone drinks.
Well, now you're getting into morals, because the first part of your bit makes total sense. If it's making you have actual bad events happen in your life because of your use, then, you know, that's what we might define as problem use.
Yeah.
But if frequency doesn't produce those negative.
Oh, yeah, effects, no, you're right. For frequency, maybe I'm just thinking about the health part. It's the same thing with cigarettes or alcohol, you know.
A major part of this conversation that I think patron Eric is bumping up against, and this other patron is the moralistic stance in our society that says that marijuana is a bad thing, and that smoking pot every day is a bad thing. And the thing is that pot, like you said, on a scale of possible negative effects on your life, when you compare it to alcohol, it is probably like 3%. What, you know, if you ask a 25-year-old, you know, tell me some of the worst, you know, days of your life that have happened recently, they're going to talk about hangovers. They're going to talk about sex they didn't want to have. They're going to talk about puking. They're going to talk about things they said they shouldn't have said. They're going to talk about getting in a fight when they didn't want to get in a fight. And guess what? All those are going to be alcohol related, and none of them are going to be pot related. So that is something that needs to be considered. When it comes to drug interaction, there's not a lot of research on it because marijuana was considered, and still is, by the way, a federal Schedule I drug. Anyway, the point is that there's not a lot of research on it, but there has been some. And there appears to be some drug interactions with MAOI antidepressants and marijuana. There is a possibility of heart rate problems. By the way, you shouldn't be listening to me anyway. You should be talking to your prescriber. Plus, I'm not a medical professional. I do know a lot about psychotropics and other kinds of things, so I can speak to it. But the point is, you should always be talking to your prescriber. Another thing with SSRIs and pot is there doesn't seem to be any risk of interaction between things like Prozac and marijuana.
I will say my initial reaction about pot when I sort of started learning about what it could do and things like that was very negative because I didn't know that I knew people that smoked pot.
Yeah.
And I was much younger. But there was someone at work that I did know smoked pot. And this person was sort of a stereotypical pothead.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were sort of aloof, and in meetings they would not be very focused. They would appear sleepy and sort of like just dazed and confused. And so I was like, "Yep, that's why you don't smoke pot."
Right.
And I do think that if you're smoking on a regular basis and and you let it sort of take over your days, maybe you're not going to be as effective in many cases at whatever things you do. But But then as I learned over the years, it's like, well, it's like any other substance that is not extremely like it's maybe not like meth or something, but you don't know that there's people that do it all the time.
Right. It, in terms of how we should see it is it, if you smoked pot every night, which is usually what the sort of chronic weed user, it's like every night after everything's, you know, put away or something after, you know, all their tasks are done. There are people who smoke throughout the day, but there's probably a lot more people who smoke responsibly, so to speak, everyday people. For some reason, there's a big gap between those people and the next category, which is like once every 2 weeks. You know, there's not a lot of people who smoke every other day.
Yeah,
you know, there's only in my experience, there's like there's a lot. There's you either smoke very occasionally. Or you smoke every day.
And it, I mean, that is similar to alcohol in a way, right?
Right, yeah. It's a similar thing. So the analogous situation to the smoke every night is someone who has, you know, two or three drinks a night.
Yeah, so they do get buzzed nightly.
Yeah, you know, but they're not like falling over.
Right.
And it's, you know, maybe an hour and a half before they go to sleep.
The difference in the case I was mentioning is as if, imagine that before coming to work, they had a few drinks.
Right. Right.
And at lunchtime, they have a couple of drinks.
Right. And any pot user will say, if you're trying to function at work and you're you know, moderately high, that's going to be hard. You know, it's going to be different. So the other thing I'll say to this is that I emerged from a culture that very much demonized pot. You know, I saw that Ben Affleck commercial where he went crazy. You know,
was it a Ben Affleck commercial?
I think it was Ben Affleck. Yeah. And I, you know, had all those thoughts and over time I've slowly had to break my cultural notions around this. It's been a very slow process.
Sure.
To the point now where pot to me is so far from alcohol.
Right.
And, you know, and I've seen people use it and have it actually enhance their life in a very real way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there's this temptation to say like, oh, you're just making excuses because you want to get high.
Right, right.
You know, maybe there's some of that. But for many people, it, you know, let me just put it this way. So you have heroin, you have Vicodin, you have crack, you have Adderall, you have Ritalin, you have caffeine, you have nicotine. You have marijuana, and you have Prozac, and you have MAOIs, and you have melatonin, and you know, all of these, if you could break down the name and get down to the molecule level, none of them look differently. The heroin molecule, the molecule that has an effect on you, ends up being, after it gets metabolized by your body, the exact same molecule that is in your Vicodin and your Percocets and your OxyContins.
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly the same. So imagine your doctor runs out of Vicodin and he's like, well, there's heroin. Here's heroin.
Yeah.
People wouldn't take it. You know, here's a pill of heroin.
Right.
And we figured out a way to administer heroin orally. No one would take it. They'd be like, heroin, that's crazy.
Yeah, I'm not a heroin addict.
It's the same thing. And no matter how hard I try to extract myself from that cultural construction, I will always have that remnant of what heroin is and what Vicodin is. You know what I mean? And so, but the more and more I try to, you know, break that down, the further I get down that road. Well, marijuana, the THC, CBD, these psychoactive molecules, they're just molecules, you know? And if for some reason 100 years ago we weren't racist against Mexicans, we might actually have a culture, because before it was made illegal, it was given out in basically like coffee shops. You know, you could go to a marijuana shop in New York City. They had like dozens of them. and you could just smoke some marijuana, like you could smoke some pipes, like some cigars, or you could have a drink or something. It was just another one of those things, harmless little thing. My bigger point here is that I have, as my brain starts to adjust to the perhaps the more rational view of cannabis, marijuana, I have found to have a very specific effect on people that is beneficial in a way that you can't find with other substances.
Wow.
Things like anxiety relief, things like ADHD management, things like antidepressant qualities, anti-pain. And again, full disclosure, I don't smoke pot.
Yeah.
And I don't own any stock in pot, so I don't care.
You're just on crocodile.
Yeah. And so that's what I have to say about pot. Any thoughts about that, Brady?
Yeah, that sounds reasonable. I think I had a similar evolution in drugs in general, let alone with pot. I always felt they shouldn't be illegal. And I used to be very militant to the point where I had some stressful moments with friends that did drugs in my 20s. I sort of regret giving up the militant part, because what happens is that they didn't understand. My main point was, every time you're buying these illegal drugs, it's basically fucking my country up. And they would say, that's...
Colombia.
Yeah, Colombia. That's bullshit. I don't buy anything that comes from Colombia. You know? It's like, nothing I buy comes from Colombia. And I'm like, you don't get it, right? And so we'd have these arguments. And it got tense, because I'm like, they would see it as like, you're just uptight. I'm like, no, it's not that. It's like, I feel you're literally part of the problem. And so, anyway, so that was a big source of pain for me. And it actually still is. But then personally, I also had a lot of biases against substances. Ironically, not alcohol, which is quite a damaging substance in abuse. But pot, I lumped with everything else, probably because of the propaganda.
Yeah. I have recently, in my doctorate, I studied a lot on substances. I took electives in substances because it was just so, I was just so interested in learning more about it. I also...
Because they gave out free samples?
Yeah. Yeah. That's how doctorates work. And I also did a rotation for a year full time at a chemical dependency center and worked with heroin addicts and, you know, everyone. And that was sort of the last straw that broke the camel's back, where I was finally like, oh, because for many Americans, they've never known anyone who took heroin or they didn't know they knew.
Yeah, right. They didn't know they knew, right.
And so there's all these weird notions that get thrown around, you know, like like you see it in movies, you know, like you inject it and then like they take off into the sky, you know, and they hear weird lights. Like, it's hard to depict drug feelings in a movie.
Right.
And so people resort to psychedelia, you know, so, and it's like, I had a very weird notion of what heroin did to you. To me, you know, all the famous musicians, Charlie Parker,
right?
All of them, right? Just
Hendrix, everyone.
Yeah, it was just like, man, you know, it must be this really dangerous, cool drug. No, it's Vicodin.
Yeah,
everyone has taken a pain pill, an opioid.
Yeah,
you know, you take it and you're just like, whoa, you know. I don't have any worries right now, and I don't feel any pain. I'm relaxed. I'm kind of tired, and you know, everything's just kind of cool.
Yeah,
it's not. It's just that. That's the feeling of heroin,
just and accentuated.
No, it's the same. The only problem with it is that your body gets rid of heroin very quickly, so you crash real fast, and so you have to maybe dose like 2 or 3 times a day, maybe 4 times. That's why heroin is so terrible, is because you've got to get your fix multiple times a day. The other problem is with heroin is that it's impossible to know how much you're putting in you, so that's why so many people die from it, because you know it's something that's cut and distributed illegally,
right?
And whereas a pill, it's, you know, it's measured scientifically, you know, 5 milligrams of this and that. Whereas with heroin, it's like, God knows. And so people accidentally take too much. Anyway, the point is like heroin, once I like talked to heroin addicts and actually saw them high on heroin, I was like, oh, I get it. Heroin.
It's not PCP.
Yeah, right. It's not. There are drugs that are kind of still weird to me, like PCP, yeah, for instance.
Angel dust.
Bath salts and stuff, yeah. My larger sort of point here is that this is a garbage pile of an episode, and also that the more if you're a clinician in particular, I hope you already have, if you haven't already, expose yourself to actual users, perhaps even while they're using, so that you get an idea. Or even just try to find analogies in your life, or use it yourself to find out what it's really like, you know?
Right.
Because then it really takes it down a peg. You know, you're just like, oh, I get it. It's not that big of a deal. You know what I mean? It's not like this big, scary thing. Because, mm-hmm. you know, when you're not a drug user, it can feel like this really threatening, horrible, scary thing.
Yeah. Or when you accidentally overdose as your first experience.
Yeah. All right. Well, that does it for that garbage pile of an episode. You know, we made one of these garbage pile episodes a few weeks ago, and we asked people to let us know if they liked it. Yeah. And a number of you actually wrote in. You took the time to write in and said you actually like it. So this is all your fault.
This is you. This is for you.
That does it for that episode.
I did it all for you, Damien.
Of Psychology in Seattle. Thanks for joining us out there. Please take care of yourself, because
you deserve it.